This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you, no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, maybe it's 5,000 people in the middle of Iowa, as we're going to hear today, there are heroes around you. There are men and women who have done remarkable things for the sake of our freedom. Each week, we visit with veterans of World War II, hoping to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so they're not forgotten. And we sure are educated along the way. I think we're in for a lot of education today. You notice I said not just men, but women too. It's not too often we get to hear from a female veteran of World War II, but that's the case today with Helen Kearney, 91 years old, of Salinas, California, but originally from Clarinda, Iowa. Where's Clarinda in that beautiful corn-covered state of Iowa?
It's down in the southwest corner, just 13 miles north of the Missouri border.
And you are one of four girls in your family, no brothers, just the four sisters. But your father had quite a story when it comes to the military. Do you remember when you first found out that he had served in World War I?
Well, yes. Beginning as young children, we used to go around and on Memorial Day and plant the flags on the graves. That was his job at the American Legion, so we always knew about his service.
Did you have any idea what he did over there or the kinds of things that he experienced?
Not really. He wouldn't talk about it. In high school, I did ask him, and at first he said that hardtack was no good. You know, the food was pretty bad. But and then finally, when I pressed him, he said, "War is hell," and that's all he would say.
And especially for him, he was of German descent, and he was fighting for the U.S. against the Germans in those trenches of Europe?
Yes, he was.
And you still have some things that belong to him at that time. Why have you held on to his uniform and his helmet for all these years and his dog tags?
I loved him. He was the most wonderful man, just wonderful. And I just cared about anything he had or did.
I don't know that it would have occurred to you at that young of an age, but do you remember ever thinking, wow, he probably went through some pretty scary stuff in World War I, and if he didn't come home, I would have never been born. Has that thought ever crossed your mind?
Not really, no.
Sorry for putting it there. So what was life like growing up with three sisters out there in a town of 5,000 in Iowa?
What can I say with four females? My dad said it was such a treat when we got married to sit down with another man at the table.
Well, I have two daughters at home and no sons, so I know about half of what it must have been like, I suppose. But times were different back then, and times were different for women. I think the ambitions and expectations certainly were different. So as a young lady yourself going through high school, did you have plans or ideas of what your life was going to turn into?
No, I didn't have a clue. And I didn't want to go into business or teaching. That's about all I did know.
And I guess if I'm doing the math right, what would you have been just out of high school when the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor?
Yes, I entered nurses training in September of 41, the same year that Pearl Harbor.
What made you think nursing was a good idea?
Well, I really didn't think it was all that good of an idea. My mother wanted one of her girls to be a nurse, and I didn't know what I wanted to do. Although, as I look back, I realize that I was really suited for it. But if it had not been for her, I wouldn't have ended up there, I'm sure. I was just registered to go to the junior college for another year or two.
But you ended up going to Omaha for the nursing program at the University of Nebraska?
Yes, yes.
So is that where you were when you heard the news of Pearl Harbor?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Take me there, because I've been to Omaha. It's a great city, lots of history, and you can see kind of the different periods of history reflected in that city and the way it's kind of broken up. What was Omaha like in the wake of that news? Did you sense a different atmosphere? Did you feel something different when you found out America had been attacked?
Not really. We were pretty isolated there on the campus. We had no radios, no TVs, no newspapers at the dorm. And we just, usually, if you had the money to go to a movie on Saturdays, you'd see the newsreel. But other than that, we were pretty isolated from the war. We didn't have to deal with food stamps and the things that most people did have to deal with because that was furnished in the hospital there.
Was it a big deal to you when you heard that America had been attacked?
Not as much as it would today. I just wasn't attuned to foreign things too much in those days. We were pretty isolationist, you know, in those days. And of course, we were all upset, but nothing to the degree that people get worked up today.
And I'm sure you had no inkling that you might end up as part of this war at some point.
Oh, no, it never occurred to me.
And I'm sure you never knew that without that war and a few other twists of fate that you wouldn't have met your husband.
That's true. I wasn't looking for a husband, but I found one anyway.
Well, and at the time, as you talk about being there in Omaha in nursing school, and I'm sure you ladies were familiar with all the young men around Omaha, and that probably turned into slim pickings pretty quick, didn't it?
Well, we were just, all we were around were medical students. There weren't any really other, we didn't have any life outside of our dorm and the campus. And that's all that were there, were the medical students.
How was it that you ended up becoming an Army nurse?
I can't really remember, if you want to know the truth. It never occurred to me not to be one. I guess I wanted to get out in the world and be a part of it.
So you graduated and you decided to enlist right after that?
Yes, I went in right away. And I was only in about a year and a half. I just got in near the tail end of the war.
Maybe it's hard to think back this far, but what did you expect to get out of that when you volunteered to go overseas? And I'm sure you anticipated treating some guys who'd been wounded in the war. What do you remember thinking it was going to be like?
I don't know that I really thought much about it. I just went in, and nursing is nursing no matter where you are. You still fulfill the same duties of following the doctor's orders and just in a little different format is all. So it wasn't that much different, actually. And, of course, I didn't really see the horrible things that some of the other nurses did because we didn't deal with the casualties. They had already been handled, the Iwo Jima ones, and flown home. And then the war ended, so we didn't have to deal with that. But we were there to do what we could, of course. And actually, the bay was full of warships. And up in Iwo Jima, my husband flew up there once, and he said he'd never seen so many ships in his life. They were all amassing for the invasion of Japan.
Well, people say, well, what is she talking about? What bay? That's Saipan. We're going to get to that. But you had a few stops stateside. You trained in Colorado and California and New Jersey, and then you hopped on a hospital ship and took it through the Panama Canal. I guess that's probably quite a cruise for a young lady, huh?
Well, yes, it went on for 40 days.
And how many women were on that ship? Was it predominantly men?
Oh, no, just 300. There were two units, replacement units, 300 nurses. I don't know where the others went. I think there were less than 100 on Saipan, and they also went to Tinian and Guam, to the general hospitals there.
So this hospital ship was majority women on board. You guys had a girls' night out kind of trip, I guess, huh?
Well, we stayed in the bunks that they were going to bring the patients back in. No, we got along fine. Of course, we were all used to being in dorms together, and everything was very pleasant.
You know, most of the veterans I talked to obviously are men, and they all share stories about, you know, the welcome to the Army moment, or, you know, in the Marine Corps, what boot camp was like and how tough it was. Was there anything in your training that you felt was really challenging or that made you wonder, should I really have signed up for this?
Oh, no, never. I enjoyed every minute of it. No, we didn't have the hard training that the men did.
So 40 days all the way to Saipan. What did you see when you got there? How did that scene greet you?
To be honest with you, I don't remember too much except for the tropical foliage, palm trees and sandy beaches. It was beautiful there, really.
You were so young, and I get the sense that you were on a bit of an adventure. But did the gravity of the situation ever hit you? That what had happened there and at all these other islands in the Pacific?
Well, we didn't know that much about what the war was like because we only heard just briefly of Tarawa and Guadalcanal, but we didn't really realize how horrible it was. They didn't write as, you know, how bad it was at that time. And so it wasn't until later when you started reading about things that you got the idea of how tough it was. I don't know how those men did what they did.
And you would end up treating some guys who had been through quite a bit. You said most of your patients were able to walk, but you still got a sense of what they'd been through. And I understand in some cases, even though you were a nurse, they almost approached you like their psychologist, or at least a listening ear or a shoulder to cry on.
They felt, I think, that they could talk to us where they couldn't really talk to women that weren't in the military. And as nurses, being a nurse made a big difference there, that they could talk to you. And you tried to help them as best you could.
Can you give us an example of that, of something that someone might have shared with you?
Yes. Do you want to hear about the soldier that had killed two women? And when he landed, he parachuted into Germany. And two German women were coming at him, shooting at him. And he said, I had to kill them. And how can I go home and tell my mother and my sister that I killed two women? And I said, they were trying to kill you. You had no choice. You had to. And nobody can blame you for that. That's what you had to do. And then he did apparently go home and was able to. I don't know. I didn't hear from him again. But I think it did help him to be able to talk to someone about it before he went home. He was due to go home the next day.
And I think it's something maybe that culturally we understand maybe more significantly now because there's been so much attention paid to it. But at that time, not a lot of people talked about it. But you got a sense, I guess, early on that you were there to treat some physical wounds, but there are emotional wounds and scars that these guys carry too. I mean, did that hit you at the time?
Yes. Yes, I think any nurse knows that that's just part of the job, and that's what you're there for. I think people don't realize how grateful the men were that we were there, because if they needed help, we were there to take care of them. And especially the Marines, for some reason or other, if they find out that you're an Army nurse or have been one, they just go into ecstasy almost. They just are so thrilled that you're there and talking to them. And it meant a lot to them and to their families, I'm sure.
Well, give us a sense of the hospital where you were working and what kinds of things you did and what it was like for you as a young lady.
Well, actually, it was just pretty much like nursing here. See, since most of the injured people from the invasions had been shipped home, mostly they're just the usual things, broken bones, different things, just the usual. Appendicitis, and you know, it wasn't much different from here.
But you did see some things that you might not see every day here. Soldiers that had been shot, even shot in the face.
Yes, I did. I had this one patient in particular, and I was giving him a back rub, and none of the other men were nearby. And he told me that, and he had been shot through the face and was disfigured. And he told me he was afraid that his girlfriend back home would not want him anymore. And that was just heartbreaking. He was such a nice man. So I told him, well, at least you'll be able to find out now what kind of a person she is. And that seemed to help him, you know, that. So it's really hard to know what to say. But in that case, I think I'd said the right thing.
You had read about the war in newspapers and maybe seen a newsreel every once in a while. But to be there on Saipan, where there are still tanks and wreckage of planes, and clear that a war had been going on there, and then you see patients like that. Did it make the whole thing more real to you or more meaningful in your eyes?
Yes, of course it does. Fortunately, I didn't have to deal with the incoming wounded from an invasion, although, of course, that's what we were there for. But then the war ended. Thank God for President Truman dropping the bomb. Oh, those men were so happy when they found out they didn't have to go up there and fight. They were so happy.
Yeah, so you're there on Saipan, and I'm sure everyone in that area is expecting, well, there's going to be another invasion, and this is the big one.
Oh, they were preparing for it. There's no doubt about that. That's why they had all these hospitals built, and they were preparing for the invasion.
You've got an aerial photograph of the hospital you had there, and it covers a lot of acreage there, quite a few buildings. So folks may have been thinking, well, it's just there to treat the people who are, you know, left over from the forces that were there. But you're saying the whole point of the hospital being assembled there was in preparation for mass casualties from the invasion of Japan?
Oh, yes. That's what it was there for, to take care of the wounded, yes.
And so President Truman decided to drop the bomb, and shortly after Japan surrendered, and you said how excited the guys were What about you? Did you do a little celebrating when that news hit Saipan?
Oh, we are all happy. They are giving parties all over the place and dances. We had a little dance band at the Officers Club, and it was everyone was just so happy.
Well, it's time for our first break, but there's much more to come with World War II Army nurse Helen Kearney. She doesn't sound 91 years old, does she? We're going to go back to when she was 21 out there in the Pacific on Saipan in the Northern Mariana Islands. Maybe you didn't realize that Saipan is still American territory. Has been since July of 1944 when forces of the Army and the Marines wrapped up a 25-day battle that saw more than 3,400 Americans killed and more than 10,000 wounded. You've heard from some of those wounded on this program. Today, a little less than 50,000 people live on Saipan's 45 square miles. It is a commonwealth of the U.S., just like Puerto Rico is. When we come back, we're going to explore more of Helen Kearney's adventures on Saipan, including how she acquired that surname. Quite a story of how she met her husband there. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.
Till the end of time.
You know, one of the things I appreciate so much about the veterans we meet on Hometown Heroes is that they're real. A sincere and genuine spirit really makes an impression on me, and that's why I'm such a big fan of Educational Employees Credit Union. It was EECU that spearheaded the launch of Central Valley Honor Flight with an initial donation of close to $25,000, and the giving did not end there. More than 200,000 members know EECU represents smarter banking, but it's not just about being smart, it's about the heart. I've worked with the folks at EECU for years, and I've watched them put their money where their mouth is, supporting their credit union members right where they live in hometowns up and down Central California. From sponsoring first-class Educator of the Year ceremonies to taking the lead in sending World War II veterans on an unforgettable journey, my friends at EECU keep proving that you are at the heart of everything they do. Go to myeecu.org to see what EECU can do for you, or just walk into any branch. And while you're there, if you enjoy this show, tell them thanks for supporting Hometown Heroes.
On the front line of freedom, you're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, visiting today with 91-year-old Helen Kearney of Salinas, California, originally from the small town of Clarinda, Iowa. Of the more than 16 million Americans who put on a uniform during World War II, only 59,000 of them were Army nurses, and we're getting to know one. We might bounce around a little bit chronologically here, but Helen arrived at Saipan not long before the Japanese surrendered, working there with the 39th General Hospital. It had been constructed and staffed in anticipation of the planned invasion of Japan. Maybe you've heard on this program before that projected American casualties from such an invasion were estimated at more than 1 million. So they would have needed a whole lot of places to take those wounded, and Saipan was to be one of them. You heard Helen describe the kind of patients that she had there in the waning days of World War II, but let's explore a little more of the life she had there. I have to imagine, Helen, that there were a lot more men on Saipan than there were women, right?
Oh, yes. There were 100,000 men on the island and less than 100 of us. So that was a pretty good ratio if you're a woman, you know.
1,000 guys for every girl.
Yeah, that's true.
I think you had some pretty good odds of meeting someone special there, and I'm pretty sure you did, but the way it all unfolded was pretty unique. You talk about timing as everything. Is it true that somebody had to get a little tipsy and fall off a porch in order to make it possible for you to meet your husband?
Well, yes. One of my patients was a dentist, and he fell off the officers' club porch and broke his leg, and he was my patient. And his roommate came to visit him, and that roommate turned out to be my husband.
But I'm sure you didn't know in that moment that he was going to be your husband, right?
Oh, no. I was dating a 6'2" redheaded Marine that was quite handsome.
And had a great nickname, too, didn't he?
Yes, they called him Pinky.
So this Bill Kearney fella must have done something pretty special to convince you that he was more worthy than Pinky.
Oh, of course. As I got to know him, he swept me off my feet, let me put it that way.
By taking you to boxing matches?
Oh, yes. I was dating a B-29 pilot, and he had just flown home, and I came back to the Quonset hut, and the phone rang, and it was my husband, asking me if I'd like to go to a boxing match because he was the athletic director of the Marianas Islands, and that's really all he had to offer. And I'd never been to one, so I thought, well, I'm not busy, why not? And the next morning in the small island newspaper, the headlines read, 20,000 men and one girl at boxing match. I was the only woman there. And fortunately, I happened to have a picture someone had taken of the audience there. And my husband, or future husband, had arranged to make sure that I was safe. He had me surrounded by MPs at the event.
And that's a great photo. I'll make sure I put that up on hometownheroesradio.com and the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. The battle had been over at Saipan, and then you stayed there after the war was over as well, so people might think, well, there's nothing too dangerous going on there. But there were some moments that made you a little nervous, and I understand there was one incident where you couldn't figure out why these Japanese folks were trying to get your attention?
Well, there were three Japanese soldiers that had been hiding out after the war was over. And they decided to surrender, and they stood by the road waving a white flag all day trying to surrender. Nobody paid any attention to them. Finally, someone did and took them in, but it was kind of funny.
And maybe these were the same Japanese you heard laughing in the woods? Let's get that story. While you were there on Saipan, it wasn't just boxing matches. You had other sources of entertainment. You actually had your own little movie theater?
Yes, we did. The Seabees were just wonderful. They had built this theater, and the projection booth was right on a level with the ward where this man who had broken his back was staying. There were some Japanese running around in the foliage, and they used to climb the palm trees and watch the movies. And when they had a slapstick comedy, then you could hear them break out laughing because they understood that, you know. They may not know English, but they got a big kick out of that. And then this other person, I had gone out with him on one date, and they came and woke me up and said he had been in a Jeep accident, and he was in emergency, and he was asking for me. So I got up and went over there, and much to my amazement, he had broken his back. And the doctors, being very ingenious, had thrown a rope over a rafter and had tied his feet up with the rope, and he was dangling there upside down with nothing on except a little towel between his legs. He just acted so calm, and he acted like this was the most normal thing in the world for him to be visiting with me. And then they were doing that to expand. They didn't have any fancy equipment, of course, to expand his spinal cord so they could put a cast on it and give it a chance to heal. And so the ward where he was put was just right next to where I was in charge. And so I would stop by and visit him a lot. One day it occurred to me that his ward was just about 15 or 20 feet away from the projection booth, and that I could take a wheelchair and put up the foot of it and let down the head, put him on his stomach, and wheel him over, and he could watch a movie. And so that evening when it got dark, I went back and got him all set up. And then he kind of beckoned to me. You know, he said, wanted to talk to me, and he was lying on his stomach so he could look out and see the movie. So he tried to kiss me, and I got tickled. I thought, well, I guess it takes more than a full body cast to keep some of these guys down, you know.
There's a postscript to that story too, right?
Oh, yes. Years later, my mother got a phone call, and this man said that you have a daughter named Helen, and she said yes, and was she on Saipan? Yes. He said, you know, I will never forget her. As long as I live, he said, I broke my back and she took care of me when I was there. And I'll just never forget her. And my mother, who was so romantic, said, woo! And he wanted to know what had happened to me. So she said I was married out and was out here and had two children.
Yeah, Bill Kearney beat him to the punch. Let's talk more about Bill. We heard how the timing had to work out for the two of you to meet. That was pretty incredible. And as you spent more and more time together, I'm curious, did he ever share with you any of the things that he'd seen and experienced during this war in the Pacific?
Actually, he was assigned to the hospital down in New Zealand, so it was more or less routine. However, he was invited to fly up to Iwo Jima one day, and he wasn't going to go, but I encouraged him to in a small airplane. So anyway, they got up there, and he said he'd never seen so many ships in his life getting ready for the invasion, and he went inside of Mount Suribachi. It had all been hollowed out. They had a hospital in there and sleeping quarters for the Japanese men, and he was quite amazed at what he had seen. He was very glad he had gone.
I'm not trying to to cast aspersions here, but I get the sense from your stories that, you had plenty of suitors over there on Saipan and plenty of guys that wanted to hang out with a nurse. What was it about Bill that set him apart and made you decide, yeah, this is the guy?
First of all, he was charming and a real gentleman. And also, if he said he would do something, he did it. He was responsible. And that was very important to me. Other people would promise this, promise that, but they wouldn't do it.
What would you say was the most rewarding part of your work as a nurse?
Well, just answering the need of any patient for whatever reason. It's very rewarding work. It's also very demanding, but it's very rewarding.
What else did you do with all your time on Saipan? You've got a great scrapbook here. You might need some duct tape to hold it together because it's been around a while, but you've got terrific photos from your time over there. It looks like you stayed pretty active. You're singing in the church choir, but that doesn't quite look like most of the churches we see around here.
No, it was a Quonset hut, but they had made the windows into a triangular shape and put some kind of colored paper over sections of it to make it look like stained glass. And it did give the impression of being in a church. It was very nice.
And you guys had your own private beach, too?
Yes, we did. By then, you see, the Seabees had time to build a theater, an outdoor theater, and a kind of a bungalow with a thatched roof and a beach for just the nurses. It was nice.
I know you had a lot of adventures out there, and I can tell just from your scrapbook of hanging out on the beach or singing the Messiah on Saipan with these other folks in choir robes. There are a lot of bathing suit photos in there. You going to boxing matches and basketball games. But what were the more somber aspects of your duties there? And were there days where what you were doing and how far you were away from home and your reality weighed on you a little bit?
No, practically never.
Really?
I do remember on one Christmas Eve, I went to my room and opened up a present all by myself in the room. And I really miss my family. But other than that, and then a friend of mine passed away, and she became very ill and passed away. They couldn't save her. And that was distressing because she was a lovely person. But no, actually, it was almost all very upbeat.
And you spent a month on Guam, too? You got to escape Saipan and taste another island out there in the Pacific?
Yes, but it was almost identical in nature, you know, that foliage was the same, and you do your job. You're there for the job. You follow the doctor's orders and see that they're carried out. And nursing is nursing, no matter where you are. It's the same every place.
What was your favorite part of being a nurse, besides just wearing the uniform? I mean, that had to be a big part of it, right?
Well, I never thought of it that way. Except caps. We used to wear white caps, and we're pretty much, once we were capped, that was a ceremony, and to me that was really neat to have that cap. You kind of think that you're an angel of mercy to try to, you know, relieve people of pain and do what you can to help.
You have a story about getting pressed into some special duty when President Roosevelt passed away. And I know we're bouncing around chronologically here, but tell me what that was.
Well, when I was at Fort Crook, just outside of Omaha at a station hospital, President Roosevelt passed away. And the chief nurse came to me and asked me if I would serve in the honor guard for him. And so I did. And I marched down the aisle, I can remember that, with a Navy man, Marine, and a Coast Guard. And my parents lived 80 miles away in Iowa, but they drove over to see me do that because they were so pleased. And I didn't really think of it at the time, but I was representing the Army from that whole area. It was quite an honor. I just didn't realize it, frankly, at the time, but as I look back on it, it was. When you're young, you don't appreciate some things that you do later.
And I'm sure there are a lot of those things when it comes to World War II and all the years that have passed since. When you got to Saipan, though, when you first got there, you were warned about safety. Another nurse had just been taken and buried alive. So there was some danger in being a woman on this island, and it wasn't always necessarily the enemy either. Some Americans had some bad ideas too. Tell me about this incident where you had reason to be concerned.
We were riding along when an Army truck forced us off the road, and three or four men got out of the truck because they had seen women in the Jeep. And they came towards the Jeep, and fortunately my date was a B-29 pilot who was very competent. And in the meantime, as they approached, I noticed both the man and the Jeep had taken their guns out of their holsters and kept them out of sight, but they were prepared to shoot if necessary. And my date ordered them back into their truck in no uncertain terms. And they stood there for a minute, and then finally they lumbered off. It was quite a relief.
Certainly. So few of us know what it's like outside of our comfortable existence. And a lot of us have never lived in a war zone like you did. And Jeeps weren't the only thing that you took rides in. Before the Japanese surrendered, you actually got to take off from Saipan in one of those PBY Catalina flying boats?
Yes, well, we flew over Tinian, which was 2 miles away. And the northern end of the island had been cordoned off for the B-29 airstrip. But we flew over the rest of the island, and the Japanese there still had their guns and ammunition, and they were shooting at us. And the pilot said, "I can't go any lower, they might hit us." So that was an interesting experience, too.
And that B-29 airstrip you mentioned is the one that the Enola Gay took off from to drop the atomic bomb on Hiroshima. So you had history all around you out there in the Pacific. Again, I'm not trying to make it sound crazy here, but another one of the gentlemen that you went out with at one point was in the submarines, and you got to eat dinner on a World War II diesel submarine. That must have smelled nice.
I don't remember the smell. I do remember the name. It was called the Gar. They were all named after fish. We had to climb down a ladder, the hook to the wall, and then walk around some of the big torpedoes, which were huge. I just somehow never realized how big they were and had dinner there. It was a wonderful experience. Also had dinner on an aircraft carrier. And then another time when my date took me out sailing and couldn't get met back to shore, he flagged down a captain's gig and said, "Is your captain so-and-so?" And he said, "Yes." So he had him tow us to his ship. And we had to climb up a landing net and with 300 sailors watching us, you know. And we got to the captain's office. And, of course, my Ken said to him that he had been one of his instructors in submarine school. And, of course, the captain wondered what we were doing there, and I was, too. I didn't know what we were doing there. And finally, after a little chit-chat, Ken said, "Well, could your gig tow us back to shore?" And that's how he got us back. It was really funny. I thought, well, he got us back. That was the important thing. But I thought it was terribly funny. I was trying to keep a straight face the whole time.
The dating adventures of an Army nurse on Saipan. Well, at least we all know how it all worked out. And we'll make a few more connections when we come back. 91-year-old Helen Kearney of Salinas, California is our guest. You'll find some photos from her time in the Pacific and what she looks like now on hometownheroesradio.com or, of course, the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. And we'll have the rest of Helen's story when Hometown Heroes comes down the home stretch right after this.
This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Not too often we get to hear from female veterans of World War II, but that's the treat we have today with Helen Kearney of Salinas, California. So many women contributed to the war effort during that time period, and they did so in many different ways. Some of them here on the home front, not necessarily in uniform, but Helen was one of the roughly 350,000 American women who were in uniform. She became an Army nurse and served on the island of Saipan toward the end of the war. Let me make a little connection for you here. See if you can follow where I'm going. One of Salinas's hometown heroes is a guy named Everett Alvarez. In fact, there's even a high school named after Everett Alvarez in Salinas right now. You talk about a man with a remarkable story. I've linked some information about him at hometownheroesradio.com if you want to check it out. But he was the very first U.S. aviator captured during the Vietnam War. He was shot down shortly after President Lyndon Johnson's Gulf of Tonkin speech in August of 1964, and Alvarez remained a prisoner of war until February of 1973, 8.5 years in captivity. He's written a couple books about it. I'll link those for you, too. And not only is the high school in Salinas named after him, there's a park in Santa Clara, a post office in Maryland. And while he was a prisoner, Naval Air Station Lemoore actually named a subdivision after him. But why am I talking about Everett Alvarez Jr. in the middle of Helen Kearney's story? Well, guess who Alvarez's track coach was at Salinas High School? Bill Kearney, that soldier that Helen met on Saipan all those years ago and was married to for 65 years until he passed away in 2011. You hear Bill's name at least once a year in Salinas when the Bill Kearney Invitational Track Meet rolls around. And back in 1945, I'm sure you were saying his name a lot, Helen, you got to come back home from the Pacific before he did. What do you remember about that, about coming back home to America after the end of World War II?
Well, I went to, while I was waiting for him to come back, there are only two registered nurses in the state of Iowa available. So I was working 12 hours a day, 7 days a week for months, because in those days they didn't have ICUs, and if you had a very sick patient, you had to hire a private duty nurse. And so I was kept so busy waiting until he came back.
And how did your parents feel about the fact that you met a guy overseas that was going to be your husband?
Well, he was a Californian, and they didn't want me to move out here and be so far away from me. But, you know, that's the way it is.
So once he got back, you two got married, and you've been here in Salinas since 1947?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
What are the things that you remember fondly here?
Everything. We just had a wonderful life here. I couldn't even begin to enumerate them.
I'm sure there are some people listening, male and female, that maybe haven't heard from a woman who served in World War II before. Certainly nowhere near as many women serving as there were men, and that was reflected there on Saipan where you were. What are you proud of as a woman veteran of World War II? When you think back on it, what gives you that pride and satisfaction?
Well, I'm not proud because I didn't really do anything. I'm not like these heroes that you've had on your program before that really sacrificed. I mean, I didn't have that to offer. However, I did what I could, so that's the best I could do.
Have you had occasion to stay in touch with other ladies that you served with or talk to other nurses from that time period?
Just once. I ran into one at the hospital in San Francisco, and she said to me, "We didn't realize what we had, did we?" And then she looked at me, she said, "Well, you did." I said, "Yes." I thought it was a great experience. It's something, too, that very few women share with their husbands is their time in the service. And I got to share that part of it with Bill. Of course, he'd been in for several years beforehand. But just being a part of the military was a good experience. You have an understanding, and of course we had it very easy compared to what some of the men did, you know, had to put up with and everything. We were better taken care of and protected and all that.
Like I said, you've been in Salinas since 1947. I'm sure you have a lot of friends here. Do they know what you did in World War II?
Very few of them. Most people don't know about it, and many people aren't really interested in that, you know, something they don't relate to.
Well, here's your opportunity. A lot of people listening, your age and younger, and even much younger. What do you think people should remember and understand about World War II? You saw those thousands of men, and you know what some of them went through, and you also know what the women went through at that time. When we try to put World War II in perspective and why it matters today, what kind of answer do you have for that?
I don't really have an answer to that. It's we were just so isolated from normal society when you're over there and not in the States, and you just didn't have the news that you have today, and you're young. You don't think about things like you do later.
What was your favorite song to dance to back over there?
Oh, gosh. I love to dance to anything. I didn't have a favorite. Till the End of Time, perhaps.
Till the End of Time, a Perry Como classic. And Perry Como never served in the military, but you might remember he did play Sergeant Laddie Green in the World War II era film Something for the Boys. And, of course, he performed for the troops many times in USO shows. I'm sure there's a few of you out there in our audience who can hop in the time machine with us and go back to the dance floor, just like Helen is going to right now. If we go ahead and listen to a little bit of Till the End of Time.
Till the end of time, long as stars are in the blue, long as there's a spring of bird to sing, I'll go on loving you till the end of time. Long as roses bloom in May, my love for you will grow deeper with every passing day, till the wells run dry and each mountain disappears, I'll be there for you to care for you through laughter and through tears. So take my heart in sweet surrender and tenderly say that I'm the one you love and live for till the end of time.
The unmistakable voice of Perry Como, Till the End of Time. One of those songs Helen would have danced to with her late husband Bill. They met on Saipan, and I'm sure you met a lot of people on Saipan, Helen. What about the native inhabitants there, the Chamorros? Did you ever interact with them at all?
Actually, they lived in their own compound. No, people in the armed services were not allowed to be around them at all. It's just that when I sang in the church choir, the chaplain had permission to take the choir in. It was just a small choir, and sing for them. So I got to see them, meet them personally. They're very small, physically small, and sweet, just the kindest, sweetest people. What was interesting was that the church was held in a bombed-out building, and there was a wall between two sections of it, and the men sat on one side and the women sat on the other side, and the minister stood in between the two to preach, and we sang to them that way. And they were lovely, lovely people.
Was there anything else that I haven't asked you about that you think people need to know about you and your story and the Nurse Corps in World War II?
Not really. All I know is that I do relate to anyone in the armed forces. When my husband and I were in Turkey, we happened to meet a couple of American soldiers walking away from some sort of a palace. And when we identified ourselves as being formerly in the service, there was this instant relationship there. It's just a feel. And you do care about those men and women too now, of course, but you care about them because you were part of it at one time.
Are you proud of your service to our country?
Yes, sure. I'm glad I did it, and I think every experience you have is helpful to you later on in life, but that in particular. You can't stand, for instance, to see the flag mistreated, and I probably would never have noticed it too much if I hadn't been in the service. And I appreciate what the service people have done for our country. We just take it for granted too much.
And that's one of the biggest reasons this program exists and why I've been trying to tell veteran stories for all these years. We should not take it for granted. And I know the people out there who listen to this show every week sure don't. I think I know two other people who don't take it for granted, because without World War II and both of their parents serving and happening to meet, your son and daughter would have never been born. You ever think about that? How different so many things would have been if you and Bill had not been on Saipan at the same time, or even if his roommate hadn't ended up in your hospital for Bill to come visit?
No, I didn't. No, I don't.
There's a lot of what-ifs, aren't there?
I know.
And you mentioned singing in the choir on Saipan. You're still singing in the choir now, right? How often do you do that?
Yes, we rehearse every week, and we give performances before Christmas and around Memorial Day. And we go to nursing homes to sing and also give a big concert. And it's very good. Wonderful music. We enjoy it. All of us enjoy it a lot.
Why do you keep doing that? Because I think a lot of people at age 91 say, enough of that. What keeps you going? What do you get out of it?
I love to sing, for one thing. It gives me a chance to sing. And also, we go around to nursing homes and sing for them, and we give to the community, you know, put on great performances, and I get a lot out of it.
And I've got to ask you, because I think everyone that's heard you today can tell that you think on your feet, you've got a sharp memory, and maybe they're saying, no, she's not really 91. What's your secret to staying so young and sharp?
Oh, dear. It's a combination of things, really. Mostly, you know that God's giving you help all the time. You have to turn to God for help, and he gives it to you. And then also you have to contribute, too, and keep active, not just, and keep contributing and keep going no matter what.
Any other funny moments from your time in the service that we didn't touch on?
Well, yes, there was one kind of, well, there's always funny moments at times, but when we were put on the ship in New York Harbor, for some reason or other, there's a snafu, and they took us back off the ship, put us on buses, and took us back to Fort Dix for the night. And as we came to a stop sign, all the people thought we were returning from Europe. And they came running out with cups of boiling hot coffee and donuts and stuff and saying, thank you, thank you, thank you. Well, the light was going to turn right away. We didn't have time to explain. So we just said, oh, you're welcome, you know. And it was funny. We had to, you know, but they were so sweet. So it was really, they were showing their appreciation so much for something we hadn't done. But we could, there was no way to tell them that. So
it was just thanking you in advance. It was a down payment. They knew you were going to do something, maybe?
I guess so.
And along those same lines, you know, it took 60 years to see a national World War II memorial erected in Washington, D.C. It took nearly $200 million in private donations to do it, a huge chunk of that from World War II veterans. And I know you haven't been there to see it yet, Helen. The Honor Flight Network is taking veterans back there free of charge to experience it firsthand. I've noticed on the flights that I've been involved with, the female veterans become very popular. Now, it might not be the 1,000 guys for every girl ratio that you had on Saipan. We don't have a plane that big. But I think the fellas would enjoy having you around.
Well, in that case, maybe I should go.
I'll make sure you get an application. And if you're listening at home and you're a veteran, or there's a veteran in your life who you think would be a great candidate to receive an honor flight free of charge to go see that World War II memorial, go to honorflight.org, O-R-G, honorflight.org, and find the hub near you. Maybe you're listening in Fresno and Bakersfield and Modesto, Stockton, Albuquerque. Wherever you are, there's an honor flight hub near you, and they would love to get those veterans to Washington, D.C. Helen Kearney, you're a good sport. Sure enjoyed this time with you. Thank you for serving our country, and thank you for helping the rest of us understand that World War II veterans aren't necessarily men. Women can claim that title, too. Don't forget to check out the photos of Helen then and now on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. We're out of time this time, but I trust you'll join us again next time. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you once more that freedom is not free.